Hello, everyone. Welcome to the inaugural season of Smart Giving, a podcast created by Tulane's Office of Gift Planning. My name is Olivia Philippe, and I'm a director of gift planning in our office, and we're so glad that you've decided to tune in. This podcast covers topics that we think are of general and timely interest to our Tulane community. We hope that you find this series both interesting and helpful to you in your philanthropic planning. This episode covers the timely topic of charitable lead trusts. The episode features a special guest, Mr. Larry Lehman, a New Orleans attorney who specializes in estate planning, administration, and taxation. Larry is particularly knowledgeable on the topic of lead trusts and their charitable impact, and we feel very lucky to have him with us today. Please enjoy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Smart Giving. My name is Debbie Marks, and I'm the Assistant Vice President of Gift Planning, Legal Affairs, and Compliance here at Tulane University. We are so happy you are joining us for the 7th episode of our podcast. We're excited to present this episode to you, which covers the topic of lead trusts. Here with me today is Larry Lehman, a specialist in estate planning, administration, and taxation. He is an attorney who is certified by the Louisiana Board of Legal Specialization in Estate Planning. Particularly germane to this conversation, Larry is also a chartered advisor in philanthropy. Larry's expertise on the topic of lead trusts is well known throughout the greater New Orleans legal community, and many have come to depend on him for his knowledge in the area. As we are currently in a particularly advantageous environment for lead trusts, we are grateful to have Larry here and share his expertise and knowledge with our podcast listeners. So, Larry, thank you for being here, and let's get into the topic of lead trusts. It's a complex but very, very important topic, and I'm really excited that we're going to get into it a little bit today. Let's just start at the beginning. What is a lead trust?
Well, first of all, Debbie, thank you so much for having me. Delighted to be here on behalf of Tulane University, my alma mater. I grew up in the neighborhood. I'm a New Orleans boy, and Tulane is so near and dear to my heart, as I know it is to so many of the listeners to this podcast. Charitable lead trust actually can work very, very well for wealthy people who are truly committed to Tulane University. It's a way to make sure that your giving gets continued for a long period of time, and the lagniappe is that it benefits your family in ways you probably can't even imagine. So what is a lead trust? Okay. In theory, a charitable lead trust is a charitable remainder trust that's flipped on its head. Now, most people, I would hope, on this call would understand what a charitable remainder trust is in general theory, but just to make sure everyone's on the same page, a charitable remainder trust is one where it gets set up by a grantor, and at least annually, either a fixed amount or a fixed percentage of the value of that trust gets paid out either over a period of years or over a certain number of one or more lifetimes, or other ascertainable standards, gets paid out to the individuals in the family, perhaps the grantor or children or grandchildren. And then at the end, it gets paid to Tulane or another charitable institution. Well, a charitable lead trust is just the opposite in theory. In this situation, the payments that are at least annually must go to the charity. And then at the end, it can go back to the grantor in a reversionary type trust, or can go to children or grandchildren or a dynasty trust for multi-generations or all kinds of interesting ways that can work. So in theory, as I say, a charitable lead trust can be thought of as the inverse of charitable remainder trusts. But in practice, however, many of the rules that govern the operation and taxation of charitable lead trusts differ significantly from those for charitable remainder trusts. For example, charitable lead trusts are not tax exempt entities, as are charitable remainder trusts. The rules governing charitable remainder trusts are designed to protect the charitable remainder interest, whereas the rules governing charitable lead trusts protect the charitable income interests. So that sort of sets the stage as to what we have here, who gets the money and when. And now the real issue becomes, why do we do this, right?
Right.
I guess the real question is, why would somebody do this, be interested in a charitable lead trust, and who would benefit from this kind of a giving vehicle?
Right. I think sometimes the pushback or the concern is that you tie, if you're using this to transfer money, especially to a successive generation, you're tying up that money for a number of years. But I think that when you understand what the end tax result is, right, you can really get what the benefit to doing something like this is.
Exactly. And when you combine that end tax result with the real, when you run the numbers, you see the real math of how these things can work. You can, especially under the current very low interest rate environment and the assumed discount rates that get applied, and we'll talk about this later in the podcast, the amount of wealth that can ultimately be transferred to the family, gift tax and estate tax free, can be astounding. It can be a win-win situation that I really don't know of a better way to accomplish it for people who are in a position to separate themselves from a large amount of assets now that are ultimately geared to go to future generations. So this is for a smaller audience, but a very, very important tool for that audience. Example, if someone is subject to, has enough wealth where a significant amount of that wealth would be subject to a 40% potentially confiscatory estate tax. And if you live,
can we just go over what those numbers are right now, Larry?
Sure. Currently, under the law, if you have made no prior taxable lifetime gifts, you have an exemption equivalent for both gift and estate taxes of $11.7 million approximately.
Per person.
Yeah, per person. So a couple, you double that. That's a significant amount of resources, but there are people who I see on a regular basis whose family resources exceed that, and often greatly.
Yes.
And there's another issue. That amount, even if Congress does nothing during this tumultuous period where there talks about complete revamping of infrastructure and multi-trillion dollar spending and how are we going to pay for that. Even if Congress does not make these significant changes, on December 31, 2025, this exemption is going to go down from $11.7 million per person to approximately $6 million per person, which is $5 million adjusted for inflation from back when this law was passed. Several years back. So all of a sudden, people who say, well, I don't have to worry about estate taxes now because there's no way I'm going, my wife and I, or my husband and I are going to have $24, $25 million. But you know something? These days, if this changes and the law by default goes back to a $6 million or a total $12 million exemption, we know a lot of families who would be subject to a significant state tax.
Right.
And that tax starts at 40% of the excess.
Which is so significant. And I think the thought, at least in my head, is that it's coming, right? We know that it's this law is going to sunset, as it were. The exemption is going to return to a lower amount. But right now, it's a really, I mean, I'm just forecasting what I know you and I are going to talk about, but it's a really great time to think about this now, because the numbers are amazing.
Oh, absolutely. You know, right now, we can be virtually assured that if your family, husband and wife, has more than $12 million of assets, you have a significant commitment to Tulane University. There are win-win situations, win-win opportunities by using a charitable lead trust. We can talk about how to do that. It can be done during your lifetime. It can be done at the time of your death. Okay?
Yeah.
And now, why would you want to do something now in your lifetime? Example, or even at death, in your will. Say someone who is interested in maintaining family wealth through generations, for example. So imagine this example. You've got, here's one I was working on recently. You imagine you've got $4 million that is in excess of whatever you and your spouse would need to live comfortably for the rest of your lives. And that could be in stocks and bonds. It could be in other types of assets, hard to value assets, and so on. You could transfer this $4 million, hypothetically, to a 20-year charitable lead annuity trust during your lifetime. And at today's discount rate, which is only 1%,
right,
you could pay Tulane University for 20 years, $221,000 a year. Okay? You say, well, that's very nice. They could probably name a building after me for that, and they'd be very happy to get that. But what does this do for my family? Well, first of all, assuming that every year this $4 million has a 6% annual rate of return, which is a pretty reasonable one. If you look at the S&P 500 over any 20-year period, it exceeded that significantly. Even after paying $221,000 a year to Tulane University for 20 years, there would be $4,698,926 going to descendants. So you put in $4 million today, 20 years from now, they get close to $5 million. And that's a very simple illustration, and there are lots of other ways to actually put that on steroids.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show how this can work. And the real giveaway is, that's what we call a zeroed out charitable lead trust, meaning by paying $221,000 per year to Tulane out of that $4 million, the IRS assumes that the value of the remainder going to your children in this example is $11,922. That's what you report as a gift, which is basically a non-reportable gift.
Right, nothing.
Because it's unbelievably insignificant. That's called a zeroed out charitable lead trust.
Yeah.
Now, there are several other examples, several other ways to do this. You don't get a charitable income tax deduction under this illustration because this would be what we call a non-grantor charitable lead trust. What happens here, you don't get an income tax deduction, but you do get a charitable gift tax deduction, meaning that none of this is included. None of this would work to reduce the current $11.7 million exemption you have from gift and estate taxes. So you're free to use that exemption or make that available through your to your children or grandchildren or whomever, you see. So, and there are other types. There are ways you can design this so you actually can get an income tax deduction up front. And that's
back okay. on the example that you talked about before. I mean, I think that just, you know, in my mind, it is such a win-win because there's a lot of people, most people do not want to have the government get 40% of their wealth or what's left over after that exemption amount. It's a lot of money. And they want to make sure their children or their grandchildren get the maximum amount that they can give without paying taxes. But from our standpoint, as a charity, you are able to achieve an incredible amount of impact, charitable impact, by setting it up this way. And the beauty of it from our standpoint is that whereas if you leave money in your estate to a charity, whether it's Tulane or other charities, that's a really beautiful gift. But sadly, you don't get to enjoy it. And what's really exciting is a lead trust in life. You get to watch the impact. You can build a building. You can fund, you know, a chair. You can do all kinds of really significant things while still protecting your family.
Yeah, absolutely, Debbie. In this example, it's $4 million. But you could do this. You could accomplish very similar goals with different multiples. That's just an example. And then another thing, with this current interest rate environment, the discount rate is 1%. So that means the delta between the 1% and the expected rate of return on that trust, essentially over time, goes to your family.
Yes.
Now, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, these discount rates were 4 and 5%. And these kinds of trusts didn't make sense. And you know something? Looking at the inflationary environment we're beginning to see now, and the Fed is going to take its foot off the accelerator pedal, I suspect, I have no crystal ball, that this discount rate's going to start climbing.
Yeah.
And interest rates are going to go up. So I think we have a unique opportunity now. And if I were a donor who had a significant commitment to the university and really wanted to see something happen now and had the comfort level that, and after talking to financial advisors and reviewing your resources and say, I can definitely part with this money today, knowing that that money years from now will be available to my heirs, but I can part with it today and not have to worry about my own financial independence or my spouse. We've taken care of that. And you know something? People who live, I don't know if there's an old book, The Millionaire Next Door. But there are people who live modest lives, sure. Many of whom have been benefactors to the university.
Yes.
And because they've lived in their burn rate on their money is such that they can operate without having millions and millions of dollars in their bank account. And if they're willing to part with the money now, that's basically pre-funding their children's inheritance and arranging to give back to the university in ways that they can enjoy during their autumn years. Why not do it?
Right. It is. It's a really beautiful gift. And as much as, you know, I appreciate you're such a great friend, you're an alum to Tulane, you can also spread the lead amount to other charities as well. You know, for so many of our donors, they are true philanthropists. And while their passion is Tulane, they have other passions in their life, philanthropic passions. And, you know, for those donors who say, you know, I support Tulane, but I also support, you know, my spouse's alma mater, or, you know, my synagogue or church, or it's a really beautiful way to use for all of your charitable giving.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of folks have donor advised funds.
Right.
Tulane, I understand, now has them available.
Yep.
And you can designate the charitable beneficiary of the lead interest to be your donor advised fund at Tulane, Jewish Endowment Foundation, Greater New Orleans Foundation, or whatever community foundation, even Schwab or Fidelity has these things. And you can do this in a way, actually, with charitable remainder trusts. They become more difficult to do that, but you can do this in it with a charitable lead trust so that you have the opportunity to have flexibility with your philanthropic goals. So it's not as if you're parting yourself. And by the way, I stumble along with this, but a donor advised fund, which you can be the grantor of this trust, be the advisor of that fund that is receiving the annual money. You can make those distributions. And then when you die, the fund in many institutions can be set up where you can have successor advisors.
Right.
So it's something to consider. So it's your, even if you die before, say, a 10 or a 20-year charitable lead trust, with some of these funds, you can provide that the same children who will be ultimately the beneficiary of this trust can guide the charitable distributions. And if they see that you're doing this, and they look at your track record and they say, okay, this trust was paying out $10,000 a year to charity, and mom and dad were giving half of that to Tulane University. What a better way to continue honoring mom and dad, but to continue that tradition.
So right. That's well, we, like you, are, you know, we have a lot of families that are incredibly philanthropic as a family, and we love to encourage that and work with all generations. And it's the most exciting when multiple generations get involved in you know, the philanthropic interests and philanthropic decisions. And it's such a wonderful lesson to teach. I want to turn a little bit to, you sort of touched on it and previewed the grantor lead trust.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure that you mentioned that and how it works and for whom that would be a really great vehicle.
Sure. Let's say you've got a big, let's say, a windfall that results in a significant amount of taxable income for you. A sale of a business, for example, you win a lottery. That's a simple one. But you have a large windfall and a very, very large income tax to face. And as a result, you're also sitting on a bunch of money. You know, you sold a building. There could be lots of reasons this might have happened. What you possibly could do is create what we call a qualified grantor lead trust. It could even be reversionary, meaning that at the end of the trust, the money comes back to you. But if it is treated as a grantor trust, and what a grantor trust means is that for income tax purposes, you are treated as the owner of that trust, but it can be designed in a way, if you want it to go to your heirs, to make it so that it's not included in your estate if you limit your powers to it. But getting back to this example, where let's say you've got this year, $2 million of taxable income coming in, and you're sitting on $2 million of cash that came in from that. You can pay the income tax to the government and keep the rest and do no charitable planning, or you might consider doing a grantor charitable LEAP trust, which could produce an income tax deduction for the actuarial value based on this very low discount rate of the amount that goes into this trust, the actual actuarial value of the amount of the trust that goes to the charity. And you can design it so virtually all of it goes to the charity if you make it long enough. And by doing that, you will get a charitable income tax deduction of the of that value. Now, you need to work with your accountant because we can't use more in any particular year, depending if it's a cash contribution, 50, and now it's 55%, I think, or is it 60% if it's cash? But in any event, the numbers are smaller if it's appreciated property going into this trust, larger if it's cash. And it can only be used in that year. Any excess would go into five later years. But if in those years you don't have this large income, they may be wasted. So you need to balance that. You need to work with your accountant using those numbers. But that's how that works. Now, the with a grantor trust, charitable LEAP trust, since you're treated as the owner, there are income tax. The owner or the grantor ends up paying taxable income of the trust during the life of the trust. But that trust gets a deduction.
Well, whatever it pays out.
Whatever it pays out to the charity. Yeah. Yes, thanks. So that's how that works, and it can be useful, but you do have to run the numbers.
Okay, and so that would be more for someone who it has a kind of a 1 year, like you said, a windfall. Like, I mean, because I always think about selling a business that can create a real taxable event for people.
That's correct.
Yeah, and it's and if you're charitable, I mean, I think that back to the. You know, the crux of this is these devices are for people who are charitable, for people who want to do good in the world. It's just a way that makes much more sense to do that good in a way that is the most advantageous from a tax perspective. It's
of course
just incredible. When you actually sit down and run these numbers, it especially right now, it's really remarkable. Like you said, I think you said $11,000 of taxable income, which are at the end of the what was it, a 20-year trust that you were talking about before? I think so.
Well, the one I was talking about before is even more dynamic than that. I mean, you can actually it is another point too. The example I had before was a $4 million gift where $221,000 gets paid out to the charity each year for 20 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, when with that, which is a non-grantor trust, all of that taxable income that's in that trust, you don't pay.
Right.
Frankly, the trust gets an income, gets a charitable deduction for the amount that it pays out to the charity. Yes, it could end up paying some income tax, but a lot of times, look, most of these assets in that trust are growth assets. In my experience, with the few that I have actually been watching over the years, these trusts don't pay a whole lot of tax because of the charitable deduction. And they keep growing. The asset value keeps growing. Because the market's done so darn well.
And I think that one interesting thing, I just want to touch on one more concept, and that is that these can be set up in a really flexible way. It doesn't have to pay out a specific amount each year. You can, based on what your philanthropic goal is or what the nature of the asset is, you can set up a schedule that will, you know, I'd like you to maybe explain the shark fin concept. It sounds so silly, but it just shows how incredibly flexible the these trusts can be in terms of the payout?
Debbie, as long as the trust instrument specifies an ascertainable payout, and if we're talking about a charitable lead annuity trust, it doesn't mean it has to be a fixed equal amount each year. It can be designed so that that payout is weighted to the end. If you've done a 10-year one, you could design so that that maybe in year one you pay out, only 1%, and then you can ratchet it up 0.5% a year. And then, or you could even design it so it's got to pay out something every year. Right. But at the end of the day, you could have most of the payout going out in the last couple of years. And by doing that, you are allowing this corpus to grow, and you're not having a problem in the event of market volatility. You're not making distributions out of that trust at a time which might deplete the corpus. So it's a way where the charity wins by making sure they get their money at a time they expect it, and they don't need it today necessarily, as long as it's shown in there that they're going to get it. It's a fixed.
Yeah, they're going to get it, right.
Okay. And it increases the probability that even after that charitable distribution, there'll be more in there for the family. Yeah. So that's what we call a shark fin trust. You can do that with not just lead trusts. It can be done with the other side, with charitable remainder trusts too at some level. But this is a very interesting opportunity, and should be considered. And it's, there's software that we use to help us run these numbers. The possibilities really are infinite. So you got to be careful to not go crazy running numbers in every different possible permutation.
Yeah.
But you can do it.
And it can be daunting, right?
Make it very, very flexible. And then, of course, the trust must be drafted to very specifically make it clear that when those distributions occur and exactly what amounts they are. One other thing, we've been assuming we're talking about lifetime.
Right. I was going to point that out.
Something
right.
Talk about how you can do this in your will.
Okay.
So one example, we've had the pleasure of doing this in our firm with some folks who say, well, I'm not really ready to make this gift now. I just am not comfortable with this. On the other hand, the thought of my estate being depleted at the rate of 40% of the excess over whatever is exempt at the time of death, and I'm going to assume for now that that exemption is going to be lower than it is today because I don't plan on dying anymore. I plan on living beyond 2025. What I can do is in the will, put what we call a charitable lid. You can have a formula.
L-I-D.
L-I-D, like a cap.
Okay.
You can put a formula in your will that says, I leave everything to my children that is exempt from estate tax. Any amount above that exemption, my residuary estate, goes to a charitable lead trust that is hereby created. My executor shall have the specific authority based upon the discount rate or the 75-20 rate in effect at the time of my death to determine the duration, any other factors that are relevant in order for this trust to be a qualified charitable lead trust. It's a bit of complicated drafting in the will, and right. There are also risks because if that discount rate is higher at the time of your death, it will take a longer, there may be less that ultimately would go to your children. But this is a concept that some of our clients have used because they're not really ready to part with the money now, but they absolutely don't want that money to go to the government in the form of estate tax. They aren't against social capital.
Right.
They want to direct that social capital.
Exactly.
They can do a better job than Washington can.
And the great thing about that is that your heirs, they, it's not that they don't get anything. They get a significant amount up front when you pass away. And then there's another amount of money that will come to them down the road, you know, or the grandchildren at another time. So, and then in the meantime, you get to have all this charitable impact, which is really, really great. I love that. That's really interesting. Larry, this is so, I mean, we could talk about this for hours. It can be complicated, but at its core, it's really not. It's complicated in the execution, but it's really not that complicated in the concept. And, you know, people like you, thank goodness we have them in our community, have you, can help people make really great decisions who are philanthropic, who do not want to turn over 40% of the excess of their exemption to the government, and who want to provide for their children or grandchildren or someone else. So it's just, it's a really great vehicle and device, and you explain it so beautifully. And we are so grateful for your time, for everything that you do for Tulane, and including but not limited to your time today.
Well, thank you, Debbie. And thank you so much for the opportunity. And I hope people who have listened to this will get something from it. And remember, we transfer not just our valuables, but our values.
I'm going to end with that. That is beautiful.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. We would really like to hear feedback from you on how we could make this podcast more informative going forward and what topics you'd like to hear more about. Please email us with any feedback, ideas, or questions at giftplanning@tulane.edu. Again, that's giftplanning@tulane.edu.